Moncrief on News Talk. Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
No, none of those things, because this week Simon Tierney is here to talk to us about dog food. Good afternoon, Simon.
Afternoon, Sean.
The thing about dog food, I think we can all agree, is that increasingly it doesn't look like dog food. Increasingly, dog food looks like I can't afford to buy that food for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the key takeaway from my research on this, is in my lifetime, dog food has completely changed. When I was a kid in the 1980s, dog food was something that came in a tin. You might have a kind of a cartoony type character of a dog in advertising. It smelled disgusting. Dog food was something that used to come up in iron stomach competitions in universities, yeah. You know, things like that. It was looked down on. Nowadays, as you say, we've gone through this process of kind of humanizing dog food to the extent that they have become very, very artisanal. And this is something that the Irish dog food industry, which is thriving, by the way, is doing as well. You know, Irish dog foods is one of our biggest indigenous canine pet food companies based in Kildare. They are producing artisanal dog food for the Asian, continental European and American markets now. And it is that very thing that has really pushed them into the successful sphere that they are in now, when they started producing, you know, snack bars, chicken jerky, their bistro range, which has duck a l'orange, chicken risotto, pulled pork, surf and turf, and various others. Now, the prize really has to go to, over in the UK, our nearest neighbour, they do it better than anyone, unless you go to the States, of course, where they've made it an art form. But I mean, there is one over there in the UK which is called, now I tweeted a picture of this earlier, it's called Lily's Kitchen Bedtime Biscuits with Honey, Yogurt and Chamomile. Now, chamomile is something that will be very familiar to a lot of listeners. I often take a mug of chamomile tea myself.
Many
before
people
bed
do. Yeah.
But now it is available for dogs. But it makes you wonder, Sean, what is it about that product that is making a dog owner buy it? Do they think that
the dog can tell the difference?
The dog can tell the difference, A. And B, is the dog struggling to sleep at night and needs to have a dose of chamomile?
Pacing the floors, the poor dog is. So, worried about the stock market.
And yogurt and dogs. I'm not sure if we're supposed to be giving them yogurt. Where did all this start? We have to go back, Sean, as we always do in this slot. The domestication of dogs, as you know, is really very ancient. Scholars generally agree we're talking about 12 to 15,000 years ago, which is when ancient wolves began to become domesticated. And that's, of course, when their diets started to change. Domestication leads to that change in diet in any animal. Before they began to be domesticated, they would have hunted in packs like modern wolves do, and they would have eaten the entire carcass of any hoofed animals, from deer to rabbits, birds, fish, all sorts of animals. They would have eaten everything, the organs, the bones, and it was raw. Nowadays, when the dog started to be domesticated, it began to become dependent on their human companions. And human societies began to give scraps of food. Now, when they started to give scraps of food, what we know from archaeological evidence is that the dog's digestive system began to evolve, because the ancient dog, pre-domestication, wouldn't have been able to digest sugar and starch the way dogs can nowadays. That's for sure. Sometimes dogs will eat bread bready type products now, that certainly wouldn't have been possible and would have made an ancient dog very sick. So this kind of process of domestication really had a profound impact on how the animal as a species began to evolve.
Right, and so it's so during this process of domestication, is that when perhaps dogs started to eat vegetables, you know, building up to quinoa now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Quinoa came probably a little bit later, but the vegetables, definitely that's something that they wouldn't have eaten. I mean, an ancient wolf wasn't looking for a salad.
Yes.
They were interested in raw meat. I was just doing a quick Google there because I remember when I was a kid, we used to give our dogs when we go to the butchers, we'd ask, "Oh, do you have any dog bones there?" And it was like bits of old bone that that no one wanted to buy, and the butcher would kind of give dog owners a few bones to give.
And they'd gnaw on them.
And they'd gnaw on them, and they were raw, you know. But nowadays, I'd love to know what the listeners think about this, but I don't think it's recommended to give raw meat to dogs. And that's another thing. Like, humans are the only species in the world that cook their food, obviously. Every other carnivorous species eats raw meat. But now dogs, by proxy of what we do, they've gotten used to eating cooked meat as well. So in a way, we're not the only species anymore that
That's
cooks
a good point.
Our
yeah.
own food. Dogs also do.
Because I suppose what you were saying about all this kind of the bistro range for dogs. Dogs for the last 10 or 15,000 years have been eating the same dinner as us, just the bits we throw away at the end of the meal. So they are eating human food, really.
Exactly, yeah. And look, I'm sure a huge amount of listeners, particularly anyone who like lives kind of in the countryside or on farms, will be giving their dogs scraps, and that is the human food. It's the waste that, you know, take whatever's left on the plate at the end of the dinner goes to the dog. We used to do that growing up as well. But in more urban areas, there's a real kind of urban side to what I'm talking about here, which I think we have to acknowledge. It is the urbanization of the dog as well. But where did the commercial side of all this begin, Sean? We need to go back as far as 1860 is when the world's first commercial dog food was launched. This was launched by an electrical engineer, of all people, by the name of James Spratt. He was from the state of Ohio in America, the United States. He was in London in the late 1850s for he was selling lightning rods, and he was on the docks down near Greenwich, and he saw some mongrels, some stray dogs, fighting over hardtack. Now, hardtack is something that we've discussed on this lot before. It was the world's first biscuit, which was Royal Navy issue food for sailors, and the reason it was called hardtack is because, first of all, it was very hard, and secondly, it was completely dehydrated so that it would store it well on long voyages. And James Spratt came up with the idea of trying to deliver something similar for one's pet dogs, a kind of entire meal in a biscuit. And again, like hardtack, that it would store well, it would travel well, and last for a long time. So what he came up with was Spratt's patent meat fibrine dog cakes, and these were a mix of grains, beetroot, vegetables, and the dried, unsalted, gelatinous parts of prairie beef from the United States. Now, it was patented, obviously. It looked like what you might kind of like a Jacob's cream cracker. It looked a little bit like that, but a bit thicker.
Right. Okay.
And it was very much aimed at the English country gentleman. You know, Crufts and Westminster and these sort of shows have been going on since the 19th century, and they were very much aimed at show dogs. And in their advertising, I did find an early advertisement from 1873 for Spratt's meat fibrine patent dog cakes. And like a lot of advertising, I love the advertising of the late 19th century because it often came with testimonials from users of the product. And there was one particular testimonial on the advertisement from 1873 that says, "My greyhound, Royal Mary, winner at Altcar of last year's Waterloo Plate, was almost entirely trained for all her engagements upon them." So this is the sort of high London society.
This is class war. This is really,
really
dog food.
Is. I mean, a bag of Spratt's dog biscuits cost the same amount as a full day's wages for a London labourer in the late 19th century.
Wow, that tells you all you need to know, really. Oh, it really does. And for how long then was it that the dog food market was really just for the toffs rather than ordinary people?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think things really begin to change in around 1922, because this is when the world's first tinned dog food becomes available. Mm. This is something, again, I'll refer to my childhood. We used to use a lot of tins of dog food when we were growing up for our pets. And I get the feeling, Sean, that they're kind of frowned upon now. Like, you still get big, like, tins of dog food in, but they're kind of looked on as kind of a poor relation to kibble. Mm. It's all gone dried dog food nowadays, seems to be the way forward. But when I was a kid, it was all tin dog food. It was the Chappell brothers in London who came up with the first tin dog food. It was, and when I'm talking about tin dog food, I'm talking about wet dog food as opposed to dry dog food, because Spratt's product was dry. And of course, that lasted a long time, but it's very hard to preserve wet dog food for a long time. But the canning process helped to change that. They started off making this tin dog food with, and it's rather sad and grotesque, but bear with me. Leftover horses from World War I were used and minced to make this product.
Okay.
Obviously, anyone who's seen the movie or the stage show War Horse will know that horses were a key part of that conflict of World War I. A lot of them were left over afterwards, and no one knew what to do with them. So the dog food manufacturers came along and found a use for them.
Right. I suppose they used the bones for glue as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, the gelatinous parts.
Yeah, hasn't really changed. You can still get the wet dog food in tin form.
Oh yeah,
Than the gourmet range.
Yeah,
of all that kind of
it's
stuff.
Interesting how advertising has changed, because as I said, when in the 1980s, it was rather cartoonish the way dog food was advertised, The very first filmed advert for dog food was actually linked with Ernest Shackleton. And I'll explain that in a moment. But if you think about it, the polar explorers in the early 20th century, Captain Scott, Amundsen from Norway, who was the first to reach the South Pole, Ernest Shackleton, they all depended on armies of husky dogs to get them across the Antarctic continent. And both Captain Scott and Ernest Shackleton were both sponsored by Spratt's patent dog cakes. And they were brought on a ship down to Argentina, then to Easter Island, and then landed on the Antarctic continent with the Huskies. And those biscuits were used throughout both of their campaigns. And as I say, the British Film Institute still has the very first filmed dog food advert, which is with Ernest Shackleton's team in London before they departed for Argentina for that great campaign in 1913.
That's so interesting. Of course, sometimes, the Huskies ended up being dinner as well when things are really tough. Somebody wants to know, who tastes this gourmet dog food and gives feedback? Maybe more duck, less orange. Paulie on Twitter says, always puddles at why some dog biscuits are bone-shaped. The dog is not fooled into thinking it's a real bone. Humans are the target for this product.
I have an answer for that. It was 1907. It was an American dog food manufacturer who was given some waste milk by a dairy processor. And at that time, milk products were really popular for dogs. And he made it into a biscuit, and his dog didn't like it. And as a kind of a marketing ploy, he decided to shape it into a bone. And when he gave it to his dog liked it. And years later, in the 1930s, he was interviewed about the huge success of his Milk-Bone product. And he said, yeah, I mean, my dog wasn't interested in the biscuits until I turned them into a bone shape. And I don't know if the dog was basically thinking I was a fool and was looking, you know, sort of feeling sorry for me or what was going on. But dogs do tend to like that shape.
Amelia says lots of dogs are fed raw diets, but it's much more complicated as you need to make sure they get all the nutrients right so the dogs don't lose condition. Somebody else makes a similar point. Absolutely recommended to give dogs raw meat. The bone content of processed dog food has led to an explosion of type 2 diabetes in dog populations. Organ meat such as liver, kidneys and heart is incredibly beneficial for dogs. The other side of the coin, my mother makes the dog roast beef just for him on Sundays with his own gravy. The roast will last a few days, but regardless of the day, she always makes sure the food is warm, not piping hot, mind. The dog has become so spoiled and refused to eat regular nuts or anything now, better fit than the rest of us. That's a very happy dog. Another texter says, I still give my dogs raw bones. They also need nuts and hard, dry food to clean their teeth and scrape the plaque off. A diet of all soft wet food isn't great for teeth hygiene. Somebody else says, I heard once that dog food must be fit for human consumption in case of a world war situation. Is this true? On Facebook, I imagine it probably is true.
Yeah, I've heard that myth many times. I don't know if that's true, if dog food has to be suitable for human consumption. I don't think it's worth trying it, just
no,
in case.
We wouldn't recommend that. Though somebody else says, rather intriguingly, the rise in the quality of dog food has seen a sharp decline in white dog poo sightings.
Interesting. That is so true.
Yeah. Okay. Simon, off you go and start combing the pavement for proof of that. Simon Tierney there. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Moncrief on News Talk.